challenge.
Opportunities.
The next idea.
Education is not a mechanical system, it's a human system. It's about people.
We all seem to agree, teaching matters. A good teacher can mean the difference between a life mired in disadvantage and poverty and the prospect of a career that'll provide a good living and contribute to society. What we can't seem to agree on is how to develop and nurture those good teachers. Our latest contributor to The Next Idea is at the forefront of exploring this issue in Michigan. Deborah Ball is Dean of the School of Education at the University of Michigan. So good to have you with us today, Dean Ball.
I'm delighted to be here.
There is a cacophony of voices all out there touting all kinds of education reforms, whether it's Common Core and STEM to standardized testing and charter schools. And with all of the various reform proposals out there, in your view, where does the need for better teacher preparation rank in importance?
I think it's at the top of the list because teaching is the largest scale workforce in the country, and every single kid encounters many teachers across his or her school career. And as a country, to be quite blunt about it, we've left largely to chance whether the skillfulness of the teacher is really at a level that could be responsible for kids learning.
And as you point out in your essay for The Next Idea, we do not have a single set of standards for teachers in this country. Why is that? Because it would just seem it would make sense for us as a society, as a nation, to have a set of criteria that we all agree on. We don't let pilots fly airplanes. We don't let doctors practice medicine without meeting that set of standards.
It's true that these other occupations and professions have agreed upon what the core skills are that someone needs, the kind of knowledge, the ethical commitments or the practices. They've agreed on what kind of training you need. But I think it's worth noticing that these other fields, their standards aren't largely determined by legislatures or by the public. They're actually determined by the profession or the trade. I mean, I was very impressed a few years ago to learn about the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Association and to learn the kind of professional authority they exercise over what the skill level is and the assessments for people who become plumbers and pipe fitters and the very high standards they apply before someone can be a master plumber or pipe fitter. And when I reflected on my own profession teaching and thought about how not only has the teaching profession not had the opportunity to define that to the extent there have been efforts to define what you're calling standards, they've been defined by outsiders, not people who do the work. So the word standard could be a red flag for many professionals if you were to simply say we need standards for teaching, because our experience in the teaching profession is that others know better than we do what good teaching should look like, and that's not what I'm arguing for.
What is the history? Why has it come to that?
Well, we needed many teachers in this country from the time public schools were first formed in the 19th century, and it's logical that we would need a lot of teachers because children are the largest demographic group. So the need to have a lot of teachers shaped the way the occupation developed. So we had to make it fairly easy to become a teacher because communities needed teachers. We had to make it possible for people to exit their teaching role and teachers to be replaceable. And all of that structured what the occupation is like. So we always hear that teaching is kind of an egg crate sort of work where everyone works in his or her own classroom and they don't cooperate all that much. But if you think about it, if you want to be able to have a system where you can easily replace people as they exit and you enter new people, you can't have them all interdependent because the system couldn't possibly work. So while it has created serious problems for us, it's worth understanding that historically this country formed the teaching occupation out of real pressures that we still experience. We still have a teaching shortage. We're about to see one of the worst teaching shortages we've seen in quite a while. So my idea that we need to agree on the quality that people have to show before they can begin teaching, it's a bad moment for that in a way.
And what do you think this lack of, let's not say the word standards, because you just say that's kind of a red flag word, but that set of quality that teacher preparation should have but doesn't, what has that meant for our kids?
Well, what it has meant is that just as teachers vary largely in what they figure out how to do with kids, teacher preparation programs also vary widely. They're of many different sizes. There are many different kinds of entities that prepare teachers. They're in higher ed institutions. They're not in higher ed institutions. And each of these has quite a lot of autonomy to determine what they offer. It is true that states certify teachers or license them, but the requirements for licensure are compared to other occupations, relatively high level and superficial. So, for example, in Michigan, teachers have to pass a basic skills test. That sounds reasonable. But there's nothing in the Michigan system that expects someone finishing a program to demonstrate that he or she can have a sensitive conversation with a parent who's upset or be able to explain an idea clearly to students at the level he or she is planning to teach. There's nothing that asks them to demonstrate if they can look at curriculum materials and figure out whether the curriculum actually distorts the ideas or needs to be complemented with other sources. There's nothing that asks a beginning teacher to show that. So you essentially get a license in our state and in most states by completing a program that's been approved. But the program approval process doesn't have very much to do with the standards of practice that beginning teachers are expected to demonstrate.
And that leads me to point out that you oversee a program at the University of Michigan called Teaching Works, and it's focused on addressing these issues around teacher preparation. You've identified a set of core skills that every new teacher should have. What are some of those skills?
Well, some of them are ones I was explaining to you. For example, being able to lead a discussion of a classroom full of children. If you're a high school English teacher and you're discussing a text, let's say you're discussing a book, then how would you decide what in the particular chapter that the students have read that day is worthy of having a discussion about? What would be your learning goal, and how do you actually organize that discussion? Another one is being able to have a conversation with a family, with a guardian or a parent. Could be about an issue that's arisen in school. It could be about something, some progress that the student is making. But, for example, what if the parent doesn't speak English? And you're needing to discuss something in a culturally sensitive way. How do you work in partnership with the parent in such a way that you together are helping the young person? And third would be being able to assess whether students are in fact learning, you know, at the sort of day-to-day level, are they making progress? That's not obvious. Students can, for example, in elementary math, get right answers when they're not understanding the material at all. And they can also get sort of really offbeat answers when they really do understand. So it's not obvious how you track on whether kids are learning. And if you can't do that, you're really off track really quickly. So we've named things that we think are, when you really look at them, they're not really subject to a lot of argument because they're things you do every day as a teacher. But in many cases, we've treated them as things that are somewhat common sense that you could sort of just figure out on your own, and they're really not. They're really not that easy to do well.
We set them, these young teachers into the classroom, send them off, and figure that the School of Hard Knocks will teach them how to do these things.
I think we have a large faith in learning from experience. I mean, we believe it as Americans anyway in our culture, and we particularly seem to believe it about teaching. By the way, most teachers will tell you this. So I've taught for a long time. Many of my colleagues are quick to say, you know, I didn't learn much in my teacher preparation program. I learned it really on the job. I learned it from trial and error. I learned it over time. I learned it from colleagues. So in some ways, we don't help ourselves as a profession when we say that, because the fact that we didn't have opportunities to have really good professional training doesn't mean that there couldn't be such a thing. It just means we didn't have it at the time we became teachers.
I'm speaking with our latest contributor to The Next Idea, Deborah Ball, Dean of the School of Education at the University of Michigan. You've also worked on a model for more hands-on clinical training. Tell us about that.
So I think this is one of the more complicated points to make about the improvement of professional training for teachers, because it's rare to find a teacher preparation program where candidates for teaching aren't in schools much of their time. They're placed in schools, they're working with teachers. Everyone who isn't even in teacher preparation has heard of student teaching. Mm-hmm. So when I say we need better clinical training, most people say, but we do that. Or people who aren't in teaching say, well, what about student teaching? So to be clear, what I'm talking about is a kind of carefulness and deliberateness about the staging of opportunities to practice, where you begin perhaps by not practicing on real children at all. You might practice with an avatar or with a simulated student. You might practice with a colleague. But I think we right now think that if you're just out there and have time in schools, you will get better at that. But what I mean by better clinical training would be staging the complexity of the work that candidates are doing. Sometimes they'd be watching. Sometimes they'd be doing it with a more experienced teacher. Maybe they'd only do one part. Like in elementary math, which I work on with teachers, we might have them just do the part of launching the math problem with the class. How do you get all the kids to understand the math problem, make sure they understand it well enough that they can work with their partners? And that's all the beginning teacher would do that day. That's actually hard to do well. So if you compare that to something like learning to fly an airplane, nobody goes out in a pilot school and is told, go up in the plane today. Try it out, see how it works. you'll learn from Hard Knocks. The Hard Knocks are real in that case, and everybody thinks that's funny. Or they tell me, well, teaching isn't like flying a plane. I think that's part of our problem, is that we don't talk enough or take enough pride in the degree of both technique and judgment, interpersonal skill that it takes to teach. And these are really things that people who are learning to do it deserve opportunities to be guided to learn and get coached, careful practice in learning to do them well.
These are great ideas, but here's the challenge. How do you get them to be more widely accepted and used? What do you think are the biggest barriers to reform in the area of teacher preparation?
Let's say we even agree that it would be very helpful for teacher preparation to be much more deliberate and much more centered on practice. This operates largely in the world of higher education. Probably 80 to 90% of teachers in this country are prepared in institutions of higher education, or they are prepared in startups or alternative route programs. And this is America, where everybody likes to do his or her own thing in their program, and the incentive to think this is a profession. We actually don't want that kind of variability, at least in the large measure. We don't want hugely varying teacher preparation. That's not really the way we've operated as a profession or as a country. So in all of the convenings that I go to talk with others about the improvement of teacher preparation, it's more frequent for me to meet people who agree that we need to improve it, but each of those individuals has his or her own programmatic idea of how to do it. So the biggest barrier to overcome is to come to understand this as a profession and to come to understand that we have to operate in the interests of students, and that students deserve to have teachers who and parents who are reliably prepared to a threshold level of professional practice.
How hopeful are you that we will see the day when these changes can be made in Michigan?
I'm a hopeful person. So I'm actually hopeful that we could move the needle quite a bit. I mean, I want everyone to keep in mind that we're not talking about a small-scale workforce. We're talking about a very large-scale workforce, and we need about 1.5 million new teachers in this country in the next 4 or 5 years at the very moment when enrollments are going down, because with all the criticism of teaching, why would anybody want to enter it? The most important job that our country has is the education of our young people, of our youth, and it's one of the least respected lines of work. We're going to pay for this. So I do think there's a moment right now with the criticism of standing up and saying, you know, people who have taught and have worked effectively with kids know something about that work, and we can't have another generation of teachers out there being left to figure that out on their own, because kids will pay for it, and we as a society will as well.
Deborah Ball is Dean of the School of Education at the University of Michigan. Her essay can be found on the Next Idea link. Just go to michiganradio.org. And as always, we welcome your thoughts and your opinions. Dean Ball, thank you so much for talking with us.
It was my pleasure to be with you today.